Evening, ladies. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Stu Webber at StuWeb.com, and it is February the 7th, 2020. And it's the evening, and I have Professor Joe on with me. And we were having trouble earlier. We're going to put someone else on as well, and they will be doing a show here over the weekend. But it's the government toying or the Mossad, whichever it is. Make my stuff. Anyway, with that said, Joe or Professor Joe, how are you this evening?
Yeah, we're all right, Stu.
All right. Now, you want to test this. I want to test it. I'm sure it's back in action, but you had suggested that I give my background, so.
Well, let me first pose a question to everybody of why I suggested this topic for this short show that Stu and I are going to do. When people listen to Stu, many times there are so many names thrown out there, people can't relate to it. They don't have a frame of reference. Like, for instance, who is Leonard Melman? Who is Larry Mizell? Who is Otis Johnson? And there are people that Stu will talk about that people don't know who they are and how Stu came in contact. So I think we'll spend a little bit of time today, this evening, stating is how did Stu get where he and how he got involved with this people, with these people. So, Stu, let's start with where you're from, what you were doing, and how you came about to get involved with this shadow government for these 30 years. Go ahead, Stu.
Well, I was just a punk kid in my early 20s, and I was young, got in business for myself when I was 21, selling real estate for a year, and then I decided to start building houses and get in the contracting business, so I did. And that was at 22, and by the time I was 25, I was taken home after grossing $1 million a year, and between remodeling and new stuff, new houses I was putting up. I was taking home $110,000 to $115,000 a year to take home. So I was doing pretty well. And I was out there spending the money on women, dating a lot of good-looking, intelligent women. And I was single, and I run across Witch Doctor, the one that sucked me in, and I ended up marrying her. And that was Leonard Millman's daughter, Carrie Millman. And I call her Witch Doctor because I knew nothing about her background, that her father was a alien-possessed, fallen angel-possessed human being, and that he was one of the 12 comptrollers of currency for the Gray Men's Empire, meaning the people are in control of the economy now. When he died in 2004, the guy had close to over $100 trillion that he'd stolen from the taxpayers and the American people and laundering money. But I knew nothing about him. I met her. I was in Kansas City. After a period of time, we moved in together. And we ended up, before I met her, this was the ironic part, Jill. Just the week before I met her, I'd been on a working vacation. And I was in Dallas, and I was in Denver, and I was looking for loans because they were paying 12% interest to close deals at 12% interest rate for homeowners, whereas in Kansas City, we were paying 16% and 16% to close them. I was actually building new homes, taking people out of apartments in Kansas City, and they were saving $100, $150 a month, and they qualified with 16% interest rates if they figured they'd turn around in 4 or 5 years down the road, redo the note for a lower rate, which many of them did. But I had to put those houses up, Joe. I was fast-track construction, 12,000-square-foot starter homes that I put up in 30 days. First one I did, 28 days. Done. Completed. Closed it. Anyway, I did it, and so my subcontractors carried me. If I went over 30 days, I paid them 10% on the money I owed them. So it saved me about $7,000 that I put in my pocket. In other words, I couldn't build a house paying the interest rates and make more than $3,000. I'd walk away with 10. So I was doing things right. And I met her after getting back from this working vacation where I got two loans in each city available to me, okay? I get back. I had a house going. The realtor wanted me to build another one. After meeting her, I went ahead and did this other one for this other buyer. They went ahead and put them in. So I was stuck around the winter where I was going to move. And I met her, and I thought, well, you know, I'm interested, so on and so forth. We ended up moving to Dallas, getting married. We had nothing to do with her parents the whole time that we were married, Joe.
What year was this, Stu? What year was this?
This was 1980. I met her in 81. I married her. And in 84, she tried to murder our daughter in Dallas. And I'll get into that in a minute. But basically, I met her in September of 80. And in April, around the first part of April of the next year, she wanted me to meet her parents because she said, I'll tell you why I don't want to live in Denver. She said, you'd have to meet my parents to understand. I said, okay. So we drove out there and spent a couple of days with her parents, belligerent, oh, my God, towards people, rude. I mean, acting like they own the town. They took us out to dinner one night and went in a restaurant. And she walks through there and walks through the kitchen. Stu, come here. I want you to look at this. What do you think we ought to do here and here? Trying to ask me for my idea. I gave him an idea. They tore out a dance floor. It wasn't even a dance floor in this place. Long story. I didn't know they had that kind of money. I didn't know what they were. They were the financiers that owned all the banks. They owned the Federal Reserve. They owned it all. I didn't know it. He's sitting there trying to stuff 5,000 acres in front of my face and saying, hey, Stu, I'm looking for a guy like you to develop this 5,000 acres over here for me. Well, you know, I understood why she didn't want to be around him. They were belligerent to people, just downright rude. I didn't have good vibes. I said, well, I'm not marrying them. I'm marrying their daughter. But I look at it now and say, hey, you marry into a family. You marry somebody, you're marrying their family as well. But point was, we never had anything to do with them after that. She talked to them and stuff, and we decided just to get married. And we did. And it pissed everybody off, pissed them off, because they couldn't put on a big do and a whole bit. And she didn't really communicate with her parents during the time that we were married. And so then, just right after our daughter's born in 1984 in the summer in July, all of a sudden she's getting inundated with all this fancy clothes from Saks Fifth Avenue. And even Phil Wynn, convicted HUD figure that I got convicted, ripping HUD off, they were sending stuff. I don't think we got anything from myself, but there was about $3,000 worth of clothes, Saks Fifth Avenue clothes. All of a sudden, she's talking to her parents. She's going nuts. Now, during the period of time of the pregnancy, she went ballistics on me. Started going nuts in that last year when she was pregnant. I thought it was due to the pregnancy. She pulled a gun, Joel, chased me through a house with a gun for no reason. Going to shoot me. I had to hit her to stop her. The only time I hit a woman. I had to hit her to stop her. I grabbed the gun, and it cut her head on the side where I smacked her. So I took her, because she dropped to her knees, I took her to her doctor. I picked up the phone, and I called her gynecologist. She said, bring her in here immediately. I did. And she said, what happens, Stu? And I told her, and she had to ask her, and a whole bit. She says, well, I'm going to have to call the police, because this is a very serious crime she's committed. But she says, Stu, there is an alternative route to keep from putting her in jail. And I said, what's that? She says, if she seeks psychological help for this, counseling for her incident, it can avoid getting the police involved. I said, okay, let's try that. So I kept taking her back, Joel, trying to get her help. Took her back 3 times, but she would never go back to the same shrink. She wanted a different shrink. It was the first one, God honor, but it was the same firm that she didn't know. It was just in different offices in the same building. But,
okay, what we need to do right here now, Stu, is, because I'm familiar with what you're talking about, because I had to deal with it as a school teacher.
Child abuse, now adult syndrome, they call it.
All right, now what we need to do is describe her behavior. Would she rage and scream and throw things?
Oh, she'd go nuts. She'd go nuts. I mean, she tried to stab her first husband. She threw knives at him. She had a pattern. 3 years of perfect relationship together, and then she started turning into Dr. Jekyll and Mrs. Webb at the time, or Miss Hyde, whatever you want to call them. She'd go nuts because she felt, as the shrinks described to me, she felt like she was in love, after 3 years, and therefore the true her could come out, is what it was. They even asked, the last shrink I took her to, even asked me just where her kid was born. She says to me straight up, she talked to me for about 10 minutes and they have an hour session with her. She said, was she ever satanically abused? I said, what? Satanic abuse? She says, was she? I said, not that I'm aware of. It stuck in my brain later that shrink asked that question, Joe, but go ahead.
Let me interrupt you. Because what we're trying to do here is to establish the picture. People want to know, what is it of how she would act? Would she rage? Would she scream?
She was the perfect woman for 3 years, and then the last year of marriage when she was pregnant, she'd climb up, wouldn't say anything for 2 or 3 days. She'd try to ask her questions. She wouldn't. And all of a sudden, she'd get violent. It was like, what was the phrase that Shrink said? I can't think of it right now. I don't even really want to think about this witch. But the point was, is Joe, she was married 5 times. I was number 2. She didn't have any other kids by any of the other ones. But I talked to the first one, I talked to the third one, and I talked to the fourth one. Okay? I was number 2. They all told me the same thing. Everything was perfect the first 3 years, and then all of a sudden, whammo, the last year she turned into a raving maniac. The third one and the fourth one would not tell me what she did to him. But they were, she left everybody hanging, trying to get her help. Well, let me tell you, she picked up an ashtray when our daughter was 28 days old, and I told her, if you don't go back to the shrink and get some professional help and counseling, I said, Carrie, I'm going to divorce you in 6 months. I'll give you 6 months to heal up and the whole bit, because I said, I can't live with you anymore. And she picked up this ashtray. I said, and I'm going to take my daughter with me to make sure she's safe. She picks up the ashtray and says, I'll kill it while I let you have it. She swings the ashtray and hits me in the hand. It cuts my hand where I blocked it. And I automatically closed my eyes and kicked her right in the crotch or in the gut, wherever it hit her. She dropped her knees. So I called the police. She runs next door because we had a cop over there and a fire. She was a cop and he was a fireman. And they had just had a baby about a week before we did. So it's about, we were in almost 4 weeks. So cops are out there. I'm telling them, had taken her shrinks, whole bit, and they're going to arrest her. And this female cop comes over after about an hour, 40 minutes, and she says, Mr. Webb, because she called and confirmed with the shrinks that, we had had problems with her, and chased me through the house and done. They're going to arrest her for attempted murder on my daughter. And then the female cop comes over and goes, Mr. Webb, you love your wife. I said, I don't know. I said, I do, but I said, I can't live with her anymore. She says, there's an alternative route we can do if you're willing to try to make your marriage work. You got a newborn and blah, blah, blah. I said, okay, what's the deal? She says, he would have to sign an agreement to undergo psychiatric evaluation by the state within 7 days and do any follow-up care the state orders her to do, or the shrink. I said, really, you can do that? Oh, yeah. So they did that. She disappears the next day when I went to work. Everything acted normal, the whole bit. She disappeared, Bill. And where did she disappear to? Took a taxi cab to an attorney's office, signed divorce papers, and left the state. Took my kid out of state. And then I get to a divorce hearing after being served about 2 weeks later. You can't even get a divorce after having a kid for 6 months in Texas. They don't honor it at all. Anyway, get there, and this judge awards her custody with me 3-hour visitation once a month to see my kid in Denver. So now it's costing me $500 a month if they put me through. Plus, I had to pay over $10,000 attorney fees, and I had to hire a second attorney. And a second attorney come around 9 months later, and he calls me up and says, I'm going to have to drop your case. I said, what, Frank? What are you talking about? He said, well, why don't you come in? I want to talk to you in person. And so I go in there, and I don't want to miss his last name. I go in there, he's standing there, and he's got his hand in his pocket, like he's got a gun in his pocket, his suit pocket. Didn't take his hand out of his pocket. I said, what's the deal, Frank? He says, you didn't tell me your ex-father-in-law was a mob don. I said, what did you say? He said he threatened me and my family to kill us all if I don't get off your case. I said, what? He said, he's a mob don. Are you telling me you didn't know? I said, no, I didn't know anything. What are you talking about? So he got into more detail. But I had 90 days to go to trial, and it was scheduled in September, and this was in May. It turns out to be in July, they pulled a number and terminated my parental rights under a default judgment, which means you weren't even notified that there was going to be a hearing. So they had a hearing without me, and they terminated my parental rights under a default judgment. And was about 35 days later, I'm down at the courthouse with the document that I got some paralegal to draw up for me to set the record straight where it'd be an equal custody, et cetera. And it cost me about $617,000. And so I went down there to file it, and they kicked me out of the courthouse and told me that my appeal time was up. I'd have to wait until she's 18 years of age to see her. I said, fuck you. I got mad. So I decided to start digging on Grandpa after that, and that's what happened. I started digging on him, and every time I dug Joe, it was another Piccadilly. I moved out of Texas about a year later, moved back to Kansas City because the economy was doing okay. I said, I'm not going to live in a state where they can steal your kids for a $75,000 contribution that Leonard Millman made to the judge. You could make donations to the judge while you had or contributions for their election, while you had the case pending before the judge. Millman gave $75,000 to this witch. And she's telling me when I went to find other attorneys at the time, two of them came back and said, oh, you're going to have to double the amount that he gave to the judge. You're going to have to pay the judge or donate $150,000 and start letting you see your kid. I said, God, this is bribery. I'm out of here. I moved back to Kansas City. After I came back here, I was digging on Millman, and I took stuff to the FBI. And I even got a report up there the first time I went to the FBI and talking about different stuff that I had found out about him. Because I started calling her sister up, and her sister Lori was disfranchised from the family. But she married a black kid or ran off with one and had a baby with him and so forth and had a couple of them. But she was disowned by Leonard Millman and Elaine Millman, disowned. And actually, one of her kids called me about 3 years ago, Joe, down there in Arizona. He called me up because he saw something on the Internet about Carrie Millman and Elaine Millman. And he said, that was my grandmother. Can I talk to you? I said, sure. And here's Lori, his mother's dead. But she gave me a lot of information, told me, about, oh, yeah, he was into all this mob stuff, and he was into this and this and this. Well, what I did is I started digging. And Joe, I found out they were doing illegal political campaign money laundering. First it was HUD. I started looking at, well, what does the guy own? You know, and I started looking at it. And I'm finding all this HUD Section 8 stuff that they had. That was where they had sent in Phil Wynn in 1981 to become the FHA commissioner so they could start robbing HUD. I caused the HUD scandal of 1989 because of this. Digging up all this information. And Phil Wynn was convicted, but Bill Clinton gave him presidential pardon. And then I found out Silverado, Neil Bush, didn't know he was drug money laundering, but I was suspecting it because of the connections in with Millman and Clinton's and Mena, Arkansas, that was floating around. And I came across, you know, I was digging. I was Steve Wilson with the Denver Post. I had 50 reporters across this country working with me. Jonathan Beatty of Time Magazine broke out the story about the illegal political campaign money laundering by MDC and Silverado. My ex-in-law owned MDC Holdings. It was the parent company of Silverado, Neil Bush director, doing the Iran-Contra drug money laundering. I nailed him. I nailed him in Time Magazine. I nailed him in the Denver Post repeatedly. The Rocky Mountain News, I had the two newspapers playing against each other. Steve Wilson wrote a book called Silverado, 8 out of 10 stories about the Denver airport. Silverado were the ones I gave him, and he wrote them. I mean, I had them heated up there for about a year in the press, big time, what the press would do, okay? And Beatty with Time Magazine spun out of it, and he wrote the book, The Outlaw Bank, about BCCI, Bank of Credit and Commerce International, which was all tied up with Silverado, and also Hildebeest, Hillary Clinton. He was laundering the money from Clinton's MENA, Arkansas drug money. But what amounted to is I caused HUD scandal, then the Silverado scandal. These were all congressional investigations because I got a hold of the girls at HUD that were really working for the Congress and Senate, doing their job and investigating and holding hearings, were the ones that expanded it with me into Silverado, into what they called the Keating Five. It was Silverado Savings Loan, Neil Bush director, you know, collapse. And then it was the Keating Five, they dubbed it, but it was the MDC Holdings of Denver's 200. It actually got one of the Colorado Bureau of Investigation agents killed over the investigation after they came out with a report they were guilty as hell. Then HUD, Silverado, Keating Five, and the Denver Airport. And Beatty was very instrumental because he wrote three different stories about for me in Time Magazine. And they got a $1 million contract to write the book. Matter of fact, I called him the day before I was arrested, and he told me, Stu, I'll get $1 million. You split it with me on a book, and I'll write the book. I said, sure, he's going to write a book with me. Well, he got sprayed. After he got his book published, he got sprayed with a chemical that caused him cancer. But Jack Blum, he was talking with, who was on the Kerry Committee, John Kerry, the committee on BCCI, and he was talking with him, and Jack Blum, he thought Jack was okay. He said, yeah, I just got phoned Stu Webb a little while ago. Oh, really? Tell him I'll represent him. Well, shit, the next day, as I called Beatty back about something, next day they were on my doorstep, FBI. They got me with a satellite, they said. They tracked me from the paid telephone.
Okay, Go ahead. Hold right there. Who is Beatty? Explain to the audience who Beatty is.
Jonathan Beatty was the senior correspondent for Time Magazine. He was busting stories for me, right and left. He actually came to Kansas City and met with me in person. And we got Margie Sloan up here from Florida, who was the one, her name shows up as a contributor in the back of the book, The Mafia, CIA, and George Bush by Peter Bruton. It's got chapter 16, Silverado and Chicago in it. That's what I gave him. Al Martin also contributed to that book, and our names don't appear. I've contributed to 15 books, and my name appears, I think, in 6 books as a contributor. The Oklahoma City Bombing, Power Politics, Defrauding America. I'd have to sit here and think of them all. Oh God, I don't remember all the books that my name does. I'll put that up on the internet site.
But that's all right, Stu. We just need to keep who Beatty was.
Yeah.
All right. So go ahead and proceed on down the road here.
Yeah. So anyway, after busting out all these stories, they found out it was me, and they issued a warrant for my arrest. And just before that happened, Gunther Rusbacher, CIA Gunther Rusbacher, his wife, it happens to be, that Steve Wilson with the Denver Post said he got a call from a guy named Gunther Rusbacher that was in jail, and he did it three-way through his wife, and that he called to say that Tower 66 Limited Partnership or 80, whatever it is, Tower or something, Limited Partnership out by the Denver airport, that it was part of his drug money payments and payments for covert operations, that he owned part of that land. Well, Wilson looks at it. He's like, whoa, this guy's claiming CIA, Stu. I really don't want to deal with him. Do you want to try to deal with him? I said, sure. So I called her up. So then about an hour or two later, Gunther Rusbacher's on the phone with her. That was Ray Allen Rusbacher. They have the site called Rumor Mill News. But Ray Allen Rusbacher is a governmental plant, folks. She was a plant on Gunther Rusbacher, okay? A plant. He knows it. And when he got out of jail a few years back for his death, he didn't get back with her. They were still supposedly married. He didn't want anything to do with it. He knew that he had been there. But Gunther was involved in all kinds of illegal activity. Matter of fact, if you go to my website and you see on the far right column or scroll way down towards the last, you see an Apache helicopter. and talking about Daddy Bush selling these choppers illegally to different countries around the world. That was a document that an FBI agent, John Cole, that's on Sybil Edmonds' website, was in jail with me, folks. He was one of the many other federal agents that were in jail in Springfield being evaluated, saying that we were incompetent to stand trial. Well, the shrink said there wasn't anything the matter with me. They sent me back to Denver for trial. The judge dismissed the case against me, yelling and screaming at the prosecutors.
Okay, now stop there, Stu, because you're going to lose some people here. Now back up, because here now you got into a conversation with Gunter. Now we're proceeding down the road here, and it's where Stu eventually...
Gunter's in that document. Gunter's mentioned in that document.
Give people a chance.
Okay. Gunter's mentioned in that document that they had filed, and it mentions Gunter Rusbacher. It mentions several other people in there. And that was a document that was ordered to be destroyed by a judge, okay, in a case of cover-up out of Louisiana. But Cole was on top of this. John Cole was investigating Granite City Steel, Granite City, Illinois, and became a plant for the FBI as an agent inside Granite City as a worker for the purpose of finding out what the hell was going on there. They made the Bull Moose Cannon. They sold to Iraq. They also were shipping fighter jets, Apache helicopters, and M1 tanks down there. There wasn't anything the matter with them, but they were supposedly going to scrap them because they had a problem. Look, they built a tank, and they got a problem. They replaced the part on the tank before it goes off the production line. They don't send it to Granite City Steel to be melted down. And these things were where Bush was taking them down the Mississippi River from St. Louis right there, Granite City Steel, taking them down on barges that belong to Zapata Transport Company, Zapata Oil, him and J. Hugh Licky owned. And he was shipping them to Liechtenstein, and Liechtenstein was something about their free zone or whatever. And then they would ship the fighter jets and stuff to Iran, Iraq, and they were building up Iraq, Saddam Hussein's army, selling all these illegal weapons. When he was vice president and president of the United States, George Herbert Walker Bush. So all this treason sedition was going on. Now, here I am in jail, bursted in Denver, supposedly on terroristic death threat charges. Only three people had ever even been charged with terroristic death threats. I'm the only guy that they said dismissed with prejudice. The judge, as he screams at the prosecutor for wasting $750,000 of taxpayers' money trying an innocent man, meaning me. Now, here's my infamous, 10.5 month joyride in the prison cell. There's all these Silverado players that were all arrested because of me causing the congressional investigation. Boy, I'm telling you what, they unloaded because they were being stuck in there by Milman to protect him. They didn't like it. They were taking the heat in the fall. I got my ears full. Then I get the famous trip to Springfield, and here I am charged with this. And 90 days, if you haven't been to trial, they must release you. If you haven't been to the grand jury within 30 days from the time you're arrested, they must release you. I was 45 days, and then I didn't even get to go to the grand jury. Okay? They said, oh, we're going to have a grand jury on you. I wasn't invited. I said, I want to be there. I wasn't allowed. It was all violations. So here I am getting my ears full by all these Silverado boys. One of them I come across, he's in there, two guys in a jail cell. And one, you know, he walks up, kind of a big guy, 6'3", 6'4", Otis Johnson. I've talked about him before, super spook. I didn't know he was a spook, but he said, oh, I hear you're Leonard Milman's ex-son-in-law. Yeah, I got some stuff for you. Hey, take a look here. Take a look there. This kind of stuff. He says, you might find it interesting. So I had people on the outside, a lot of reporters I was talking with. Hey, man, check this out. Check that out. Look, it all started coming true. I'm going, oh, my God. So I took a notepad up, sat down day after day with him for about 2 weeks straight and got as much out of his brain that I could about Leonard Milman. And then I get taken off Springfield. I come back and he's gone. But his roommate's there, and I went up, knock on the door, hey, he says, oh, Stu, he says, Otis isn't here. He's already gone. He was there because he told me he was testifying against the Louisiana governor who he put in jail, at the time for loan fraud to deal with Royal Bank of Canada. Deal with Royal Bank of Canada, part of Leonard Nolman's banking group there that's the largest in Canada that Meyer Lansky had. Now, here's what happens. I get back, and this guy says, Stu, I never told you. He says, I've noticed about you. Notices you keep your mouth shut. I said, yeah. He says, I noticed you talked to all these people, but yet you never tell anybody what you talked about someone else. I said, no, I don't. He said, well, Otis told me you could be trusted. He said, if I tell you something, you keep your mouth shut? I said, yeah. He says, you asked me one time what I was in here for. I never answered you. He says, I'm in here under protective custody because I busted John Dottie. I said, you did what? He says, yeah. He said, I've been in here for almost 6 months under protective custody. He said, because I busted John Dottie. And he says, Otis busted the Louisiana governor. He said, there's operations of government going on. And they have been. So he says, how'd you come out on your evaluation? I hear that you're saying you're totally normal. I said, yeah, that's what they're saying. He said, oh, you'd be down at the courthouse and let loose soon. He said, they're not going to keep you. He says, you haven't done anything wrong. Well, that's what ended up happening. But I also ran into the people that were running the sting operation on Leonard Nolman. M&L Business Machines, 1997. M&L, or Millman, had to pay an $80 million fine. I was invited to the grand jury in 1997 by the M&L parties involved. It was a sting operation that Ross Perot set up after Ronald Reagan was shot. He put six people as oversight over the CIA because he thought they were involved in his shooting, Hinckley. Now, Hinckley, who shot Ronald Reagan's brother, was at the birthday party that night of Neil Bush's in Denver. They were good buddies. This was Hinckley who shot Ronald Reagan. And where was Hinckley's father? Having lunch with then Vice President George Bush at the Vice President's house. Why Reagan's being shot by Hinckley. Now, here's the point. 1997, Millman gets nailed because of the people that I was in jail with, one of them sat in jail intentionally because he was spying on the others. He says, Duke, he said, why do you think I walk out here 5 to 7 o'clock each evening and I don't come back, supposedly over clean the warden's house and all this other, and I don't get back over until 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning? He says, every day. I said, yeah, I notice that. He said, I go home. He was going home. Nobody that's just been sentenced and or pre-trial, they call it, are allowed to go to clean the warden's house. Point was, this guy was part of the CIA, part of an IRS sting operation that Ross Perot set up after he was appointed. And in 1984, he set up this operation to go after the drug money. To stop drugs, because he saw it when he was part of the CIA oversight committee for 2 years or whatever it was. He resigned after he set up this operation of 300 men. And they went after everybody. They went after the Castellanos, the Gambinos, went after Gotti's. They went after everybody. Leonard Nolman, Silverado, Neil Bush, Jeb Bush. They went after all of them. But they got Millman, and they got Mizell, and they got Brownstein. They got Brownstein for a $10 million fine. They got Millman for an $80 million. They got Larry Mizell for $10 million, and Frederico Pena, the former mayor of Denver, had to resign his position as Secretary of Department of Energy because at the time he was under indictment for taking a $2.5 million bribe from Phil Wynn and Leonard Millman that was laundered through M&L Business Machines, which, remember, I told you folks, they were the governmental cut out, they infiltrated Denver, and they started becoming a money laundering scheme for them. That's okay, how good they are. Yeah.
Because there's people out there that need to know who is Bronstein, who is Larry Mizell. We know that Leonard Melman is the one that took Mayor Lansky's place as the head mob boss. but we need to find out who is Larry Mizell. And
well, Mizell and Brownstein came out of law school together in 1972 out of Boulder, and Brownstein became an attorney for Millman, whereas Larry Mizell, he set him up in doing apartments, building new apartments with MDC Holdings. So they became one of the largest apartment builders in the country. Now they're, and their apartment building came to an end, a very abrupt end, because of me causing the HUD scandal. They were just getting all the money. They were getting 8 out of 10 HUD dollars. They own 8 to 9 apartment complexes out of every 10 in the entire country now. But Mizell got in the building business and running MDC Holdings. Richmond American Homes is a subsidiary of it, many other companies. They're one of the top 5 or 8 top builders in the country. They build in Arizona and California and Colorado and the whole East Coast, and they're big. Anyway, that's where Mizell went. But they created subsidiaries, 10,000 of them or more, underneath MDC Holdings, the parent company. And one of them was Silverado Savings and Loans, Neil Bush director, sitting there laundering the drug money. Now, Brownstein and Larry Mizell, Norman Brownstein, were both directors of Silverado itself, with Neil Bush being a director. Now, Brownstein, in 1975, now in 72, he goes to work for Millman. In 1975, he goes to work for Daddy Bush as the CIA director, when George Herbert Walker Bush was CIA director from 75 to 77. There he is. All of a sudden, he's one of the 6 CIA council, they call it. Okay? And those 6 CIA council today are the council who control through trust that they set up foreign trusts, such as Hillary Clinton sitting there creating foreign trusts. It sounds like Chinese companies trust. By being a foreign trust, they don't have to pay U.S. income tax on the sale of their products here. So set up all these trusts. Now, one trust, as an example, was called the UNCS Trust, O-N-Y-X. That is a trust controlled by trustee Norman Brownstein. But Hillary was creating the paperwork. They were creating so many, sending them up to him. Now, Brownstein, as the trustee of UNCS, UNCS Acceptance Company out of Phoenix, Arizona, UNCS Acceptance Company based in Las Vegas and Phoenix, I think 10 years ago or 15 years ago, they were loaning the money of 50% of all used vehicles purchased in America from all the dealers. They were supplying the money for those loans. And you know where that money came from? It was all Silverado drug money, laundered drug money. So you can go buy a used car, a new car, or a used car, and UNCS Acceptance Company will make you the loan. And there's Norman Brownstein, the trustee of the company, paying no U.S. income tax. That's an example of what he did. But at 6 CIA Council, they were hiding not only hiding the money, but they started buying up attorney firms all across the nation because they were stealing and wrecking the economy. Now, these men have taken in 1981 the group in Denver, along with Daddy Bush, and they only control 20% of the U.S. economy, according to the General Accounting Office. The watchdog over the Congress and Senate has power and authority to do arrest and so forth, but no prosecutorial ability. They answer the Congress and Senate. In June of 2012, they said that 400 men now control 95% of the U.S. economy. And I found that here they are with Norman Brownstein and Fidelity Financials controlling 48% of the pension funds, and Larry Mizell moves in, and J.P. Morgan's in trouble over the loan fraud and stuff, and Mizell's in trouble, which he had to pay in that settlement that they did a few years ago. He had to pay $2.5 billion, I think, in a fine. But I never got paid my reward, and I'm the one that caused the bank bailout, the follow-up on it. They never paid me a reward. Even though I put it in, they never pay rewards. They lie to you, folks. The government lies to you. Now, here's the point. The 400 men are now in control of 95% of the economy. Brownstein, the lawyer, he's controlling 48% of the pension funds. And he got Larry Mizell that moves in and buys from J.P. Morgan when they're in trouble. He buys the 42% of the pension fund that J.P. Morgan owned through Great West Life of Denver, a subsidiary of Power Financial that was the old Meyer Lansky's money, the old dirty mob money, Jewish mob. Power Financial is the largest bank in Canada. Milman created Great West Life of Denver from Power Financial's money when he took over from Meyer. Great West Life owns HSBC Bank, Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corp, the largest bank in the world. Western Savings, the collapse, was owned by Great West Life of Denver, and many other savings and loans that they robbed and looted were owned by that. The drug money from Silverado left Silverado in bundles. They would create an $8,500 bundle because 10 grand or more, they had to report to being transferred. So they create $8,900 bundles of money wiring every day from Silverado and J.P. Morgan. I went from there to the Isle or to the Bahamas, then the Isle of Jersey, which was John Dix from Denver, who later was brought up on income tax fraud over there, and he moved over to the Isle of Man. He was sitting there laundering the money to HSBC Bank, Milman's bank. Then HSBC, it would be shipped to Switzerland, and it went to Volksbank, one in Basel, Volksbank, Swiss Bank Corp, and there was an old Nazi that was a World War II fugitive that was hiding out over there that was one of the colonels underneath Adolf Hitler. He was laundering the money for him. Now, they had what they called discretionary accounts, and so there was this guy named Isley of Isley Brokerage of Las Vegas, Nevada, and he had a Gresham, Oregon nursery where Dick Cheney and Daddy Bush and Kissinger were seen chasing kids around half naked with shotguns and killing some. He owned the big nursery out there. Now I heard he sold the nursery, but he still has the big farm where they do it. But he had a place in Reno, and he had a place in Las Vegas, the Flamingo and Spencer, called Isley Brokerage. Now it's called Webb Bush Isley something brokerage, where Daddy Bush moved in on it. But Isley was laundering all this dirty drug money from him and making it look legit because he was getting his money from these three vice presidents, one of each bank, that were also part of the money laundering. So Isley sat there with discretionary accounts and sat there and bought up Wall Street for this company, that company, and this company that belonged to Larry Mizell and Daddy Bush and Henry Kissinger and others. That's how the money went. It's in the book, The Mafia, CIA, and George Bush, because I gave it to him. Okay? But that's what Denver is about. It was the money center and still is. They control the economy of the United States. When Leonard Milman died in 2004, Larry Mizell, over the next year, took over all the trusts and all the companies that he was in control of. Because as Otis Johnson, super spook that I met, told me, he said, Stu, whatever lived in your ex-father-in-law has lived for thousands of years. They call them aliens. I said, I call them fallen angels. He says, well, I'm pretty much in agreement with you on that. But he says, this thing has lived in Milman for thousands of years before they inhabited Milman, who is the host body, who is evil enough to allow this thing to come into them so they can operate out of the host body. When Milman died, that thing jumped into Larry Mizell. He's the host body. He's one of the Council of 12, they call it, the Illuminati, the Gray Men's Empire, comptrollers of their currency. Remember, Ed Slade, U.S. scientist I met in Las Vegas. He worked at Papoose Lake, Nevada, the alien base. A good friend of Otis Johnson's, Harry Rupp, he's in the book, Drugging America, the Mafia, C. on George, or Defrauding America as well. He became a good friend of mine. He was taking gold, melting it down, turning it into dust, taking it to Switzerland, putting it back in the gold bars. Supposedly, excuse me, with diplomatic immunity for the purpose of take Colorado Earth to Switzerland, and he'll bring a 727 back gold Earth from Switzerland back to Colorado. So this is some kind of a deal between the two countries. And this is how they were hiding moving all this gold. A 727 filled full of boxes, full of earth, shiny earth. All he did is took his little magic chemicals, put it back, and turned them back into bars from the dust. That's what Harry did. Now, Harry was Daddy Bush's pilot. And he flew Daddy Bush in the Papoose Lake where the alien base was, the same place Ed Slade worked at. I've come across all these people when I was in Springfield being evaluated. There were 1,500 Iran-Contra players down there. There was a general. There were colonels up the yin-yang, captains up the yin-yang. That Bush had them all arrested because of Lawrence Walsh. Good guy. Kenny Starr took over after Clinton fired Lawrence Walsh. But Walsh had Daddy Bush nailed. And Daddy Bush did what? Before he leaves the presidency in December of 1992, he gives on Christmas Eve to Ollie North, Caspar Weinberger, Secretary of State of Defense, and Admiral Poindexter. Gave them all presidential pardons for their role in Iran-Contra that had been stinking up the presidency all year long. Now, I was working with Ross Perot back during that period of time while I'm hiding from the FBI before they arrested me. I'm giving him information, and he's running with it. And he also checked out Gunther Rosbacher, said he was an SR-71 pilot and flew Daddy Bush back from Paris to New York so he could be at a meeting. So it didn't look like he was paying Bonnie Sadar, the president of Iran, his $40 million from Valley Bank in Phoenix, of where they got it from, and took it over there in a plane. And Gunther Rosbacher and Harry Rupp and Dick Kubrinicki were the pilots. I talked to Dick a couple of times way back. He wouldn't talk to me, really. But the other two I became friends with. So I knew this. I knew things that happened. It's called October Surprise, how Daddy Bush stole the election. And then the day they're inaugurated, Reagan and him, 5 months later, the Iranians announced they're going to release the hostages, as though Iran's afraid because of the new administration. It made them look good. And it was all a payment. He paid them to keep the hostages until after the election. This is Daddy Bush. So I come across all these people, like John Coldus on Sybil Edmonds, the FBI whistleblower on 911, about the communications with the Turkish American Council before the event took place. The whole bit. The Jewish connection to this 911 stuff they won't let her talk about. Okay? There's a whistleblower site. John Cole is up there. He was in Springfield with me trying to bust him. Who was he trying to bust? Gunther Rosbacher, that was shipping these things by rail from the different manufacturers, Apache helicopters, M1 tank setter. He was doing what? He was investigating, trying to bust him. He got busted. Put away. He was an FBI agent. But I was in, and here's another example of someone else I was in jail with. Bo Abbott, DEA pilot. Been flying Central America for 6 days a week looking for a possibility. They took a bulldozer and cleaned something out and just made a runway where they landed drugs or something. He was doing this for DEA, and all of a sudden they asked him to take a shipment, from take this cash down, because this is a special shipment that we're getting back. And he flies into Addison Airport as a DEA pilot, ordered by his boss to do this. And he lands the plane, he gets out, and they come out, they're grabbing these bags and stuff, and he opens one of them up in kilos of cocaine. He said, I didn't agree to do this. What's this all about? Well, you're compromised now. He ended up, when he agreed to come back to the United States after leaving it, and his wife was murdered because he was going to testify before Congress about what had happened, why he left the country. He had a baby. Had to adopt his child out, 45 days old, because they murdered his girlfriend, going to be his wife. So Bo came back. Guess what? They zapped him, put him in Springfield, you know, I haven't talked to him in a long time, but there is a video up on YouTube, I believe, on my YouTube channel, YouTube/StuWeb1, of Bo. I believe it's still up there. If it isn't, I can put it on my site easy enough. But he talks about the stuff that he did. Now, I'm walking around the track each evening, 5, 6 o'clock. We were allowed to go outside in Springfield, Missouri. So we're walking around the track talking. I met everybody. Bob Hunt, Office of Naval Intelligence. Who was he working for? Gunther Rushbacher. Colonel Gunther Rushbacher, Office of Naval Intelligence. Here's the Naval SEAL Lieutenant Commander, Naval SEAL team, Bob Hunt, Robert Hunt, that is locked up down there, walking around in full military uniform without any insignias on him. And he's telling me what he's in there for, because he busted Noriega. He captured General Noriega, him and his Naval SEAL team. And Bush is on the phone on the walkie-talkie, and he's saying, Hunt, you got him? He says, yes, sir. He says, kill him. He says, sir, we just arrested him. He says, I don't want him to come back alive. You kill him. You follow my order. He says, fuck you, Mr. President. And he got shoved in Springfield as punishment for 6 months. By Bush. There was a partner of Bo Abbott's that was killed. Santa Burial, I think was his name. He was killed with a poison, and he killed a federal judge that was investigating. And it was all this drug stuff, and it was related to the actor's father that was one of the shooters on Kennedy, inflating cheers. But there was a lot of that stuff that was tied up that Bo was aware of, the Texas stuff involving the DEA. I ran across all these people. I ran across all these people sitting in dumps in Central America. A whole fleet of, I mean, not a whole fleet, but there were 12 or 14 Marines that were down there. I mean, there was 1,500 Iran-Contra players. Half of them were military. But what were they doing? They were extracting people out of Central America, sitting inside the middle of a dump with barbed wire around the top of it. That was their headquarters. These are the kind of people I was locked up with, Joe. And did I get an earful? I got documents that are so secret. If I put them out there, all they do is kill me for it. And the people I've come to know, like Otis Johnson, you still there, Joe?
Yeah, I'm here.
Like Otis Johnson, shooting school, he was William Casey's buddy. He was his assistant. And I don't know whether I said this on this program, but William Casey was murdered after he said Bush is out of control, and he was just getting ready to resign as CIA director and so forth. He said, I'm going to tell everybody in Congress what the hell Bush has done. He's robbed and looted his country and ruined it. He's committing his treason and sedition. So Casey's going to testify. The morning he's going to testify for Congress, Bush shows up at his office with two of his goons who hold Casey down in a chair, and Bush takes a needle and shoots him in the temple that causes him a cerebral hemorrhage. Now, William Casey ends up at Bethesda, Maryland, at the naval base, at the hospital. And the fourth or the top floor above him and the floor below him are all closed off by Secret Service. Nobody's allowed in there except for Otis Johnson and someone else that I'll never mention their name. I'm not allowed to. I made an agreement. I would never do that. But these were the top assistants to William Casey. Otis was one of them. Otis said that Casey told him what happened. Bush had done this to him. Now, one time when Otis Johnson was to go get a signature because the national security chief at the time was Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush underneath Reagan, got to have this signed. We have to have a sign. Now we can't fax it and fax it back. We have to have a fresh signature in order to get this operation done. So here's Otis. He's got to get out to Denver, Colorado. He didn't tell me how he got there, but he told me one time that he flew in the underground tunnel from underneath the White House to Los Angeles, and only took him 45 minutes. He said if the thing came off the rail, he said I would have been like someone taking a fly swatter and swatting me if it had come off. But He went to Denver. How he got there, he really never said, whether he's fly out there or whether he took the rail. He goes Denver, because Denver and Washington, or Denver is the second White House, folks, in case you're unaware of it. It's in the Argo Tunnel. There's a huge White House there and a huge Capitol, and it goes to the alien center of the Earth base. We'll get into it now.
Let me hold you right there for folks. What Stu is talking about, and it took me a little bit to figure it out, what Stu is referring to, the Argos Underground is a series of complexes that extends itself from what is called Center Colorado, and it goes south all the way to Pikes Peak. It's not just in one place, but it goes extending all the way from Center Colorado all the way down to Pikes Peak. It's a big, huge underground complex. Go ahead, Stu.
Believe me, I've seen the drawings on that, folks. The guy that's the comptroller of currency for that particular piece of property for the Central Intelligence Agency, a sheriff brought him to me because Bush was trying to steal the company from him, and he wanted to talk to me. And I got on the radio and said something. I saw the drawings. I know how this thing runs from the Glory Hole mine, they call it up by Central City, all the way down to Pikes Peak. And they fly the Aurora airplane. It flies 36,000 miles an hour. They fly it up through Center Colorado, right in behind Pikes Peak. And that's where they go in the hole. And the first highway, when you get out of Denver going west on I-70, you come up second mountain range you hit, is Idaho Springs, Colorado. The first highway you take south, it goes nowhere. It goes out of ways and stops. Turn around, come back a half mile. There's a gravel road that goes into the tunnel that way also. But here's what I was talking about Otis going to Denver. So he tells me he went to Denver, and he's told to go into the Brown Palace Hotel and go through the ship's cavern and go across. There's a door down there by the bathrooms, and the door will be unlocked. Just go through the door, go through the tunnel. It's lit up, you can see. And he says, go across the street there to the old Nabari and get Bush's signature. So he does. Knocks on the door. He shows the guy an ID. He's the big guy there. All this says, I got to see the vice president. Hold on. So all of a sudden, he comes over by the door. Bush does. After the guy gets him, and he opens up the door to Otis. He says, what's up, Otis? He says, Mr. Vice President, I got to see your face because I have to have your signature on this, you know, top secret document right now. And so he pulls the hood back. Otis says he's looking over, and there's a bunch of freaks with this glass pipe coming out of the heart of an infant that's dead, and they're sucking the blood out of it, and they're passing around this chalice, this, you know, big thing to drink out of, drink blood. And so Bush signs it. And then after he pulled his thing back, he says, I owe this. He said, if you ever tell anybody what you've seen, he says, I'm going to have you killed. He says, yes, sir. And he leaves. That's how he knew about, that's how I found out about, folks, them drinking blood and killing infants out in Denver, Colorado on the summer winter solstice.
Let me
other people have confirmed it. Pardon me?
For the audience, hang on. Let me interject here because the audience kind of has to get a picture of this. If you go to downtown Denver, one of the big historic hotels is called the Brown Hotel.
Brown Palace.
It's over an aquifer that is 99% pure water. And it's a very expensive hotel. Now, right across the street, it is called the Anschutz Western Art Museum. It's just a museum now, but back then it wasn't. To get there, to avoid scrutiny, these participants of this human sacrifice would go down through the Brown Hotel tunnel. And the way you got there is that you went through the bar, and there between the restrooms is a doorway. And you go down that doorway, and it takes you through a tunnel. Now, today, because we had some people that were from Denver, we talked to them on the phone, and they went and visited. You can go there today and see the tunnel, but they'll only let you go so far. It is now part of the hotel where they have a gift shop, where they have massage tables. And then you go in one direction and you can tell there's a security guard down by there and he won't let you go any further. So the tunnels do exist. And the Brown Hotel is right across the street from the Western Art Museum, Denver, Colorado. Go ahead, Stu.
These are some of the people, you know, so people understand how I gained this knowledge. It isn't just what they told me. It's the paperwork that they presented as well. I mean, take a look at that document up there with the fighter jets as an example. Look at the document that says Ted Gunderson sold Stinger missiles to Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden selling Stinger missiles illegally. Stealing a China-linked naval facility with Michael Reconosciuto and others, okay? It wasn't Reconosciuto involved. And then you got Michael that was working with Ted Gunderson and Raymond Lavis and all this. I mean, folks, Jason Society boys, they're the ones that design and stuff. Raymond Lavis is the guy that designed lasers that turn in midair. I met him. I took him to California once from Las Vegas over to some courthouse he had to go through for some deal to get a camera back that belonged to the NSA. And I went over there with him and heard all this crap going on the way over and on the way back. He changed at the naval facility up in Washington State at a lab they got up there with a bunch of scientists. He sat outside a little villa. They gave him a car and a villa and brought him cash every week, paid him in cash. He sat there with the Inslaw software trying to figure out a way to turn frequency, light and sound waves in midair. And he did it after 7 years. He picked up where Michael Reconosciuto left off because Reconosciuto blew the whistle that they had put a trap back door in the stolen Bill Hamilton family Inslaw software. The Justice Department bought the software for the purpose of tracking white collar criminals such as Leonard Millman. Oh, he turns up in this savings loan down here in Florida. He turns up here in Denver. He turns up on a bank up here that's down. He turns up here. All of a sudden, the U.S. attorneys can track him. But Daddy Bush didn't want that. And he even got rid of the RICO offices besides stealing that software, of which the United States Congress said it was the most outrageous thing they had ever seen that the government had done to a private individual with an agreement.
Okay, now, Stu, now, hold it right there so we can build a little framework for the audience. What Stu is talking about is Promiseware. It was just like Stu said, it was mainly to track criminals. But what they did is that a man by the name of Robert Maxwell, who was the top Mossad agent in England, and his daughter was Gesseline, who was the person that handled Epstein. Now, what has happened to that Promiseware is that the Israelis have put that Promiseware into a CPU called ARC, and an Intel motherboard has its CPU, but that ARC is on top of it. So now we have, through the Mossad and other intelligence agencies, this backdoor to any computer that has that type of motherboard and CPU.
Now, I might add that Intel is a spinoff of Promise. Intel chip that almost all the computers have in it. That was stolen. That was part of Bill Hamilton's $200 million they owned for the hardware and the software. Now, what Bo Abbott, when he said that they started having him run the White House, or rather than looking for the drug dealers so much, he'd fly up there and he'd go in and get a disc that was said Inslaw on it. It said Inslaw, and it was financials between the DEA and Daddy Bush, where they were privatized an army of drug dealers through the DEA. But he was taking the records because they wanted it from Daddy's computer. So he went up there about once a week for 2 or 3 months picking up Inslaw software. It was marked Inslaw. Now, Michael Reconosciuto that worked for Ted Gunderson and they were all tied up at the China Lake Naval Facility and spook operations and everything else that sold Osama bin Laden Stinger missiles. And I said, the documents, punching search engine on my site, and you find it. Okay, here's the deal. The Kaneshita was put in jail. Jimmy Rothstein, that's been a guest on my show, ex-New York detective, has made a comment about he investigated, and I knew he did, Kaneshita and his case. And it was another guy working for Gunderson that actually put Kaneshita in jail. But Gunderson went up there and testified against him, tried to, saying that he was working for the DEA, when in fact he was an ex-FBI agent who was kicked out of his Los Angeles office and put to early retirement, folks, because they found out that Ted Gunderson wasn't totally mentally right. He was a paranoid schizophrenic because he was holding satanic ceremonies in his FBI office. And the underlayments directly underneath them started complaining to Washington. So they did mental evaluation testing, found out it was paranoid schizophrenia. Now his daughter has the same problem, and his son, Ted Jr., out of four kids. His daughter would get on an airplane to go see her mother fly over there, and she would all of a sudden freak out, and Ted would have to go get her out of jail. She'd be locked up in a mental ward someplace because she went freaky. Oh, I'm having out of body spirits. And Ted Gunderson, they put to early retirement, folks, because and then the FBI 5 starts using him again where he was working out of from the beginning, the bad guys, the Strux, the McCabes. Or Andrew McCabe, Strux, the Comeys, those types, dirty FBI. But Kaneshita was put away illegally for opening his mouth. He put a trap back door that was sold to the intelligence world of all the countries. Daddy Bush was pushing it. If he couldn't make money off it, he'd give him a free copy. So he could take with the Israeli government, which owns, not the government, private Israelis own the United States government's phone company. It's called PSI, Inc., Washington, D.C., Cogentco, C-O-G-E-N-T-C-O, owned by these private Israelis, et cetera. This telephone company is controlled by the state of Israel and all hooked in because of this Inslaw software that they did. This whole thing's hooked up together. The Israelis could do spying on all of our congressmen and senators, their text messages, their phone calls. They hear everything. This is Big Brother. This is Daddy Bush's creation, folks. He created it. Now it's gone beyond computers. Otis Johnson flew into Area 51. See their new toys. Then he flew once. I put him at the airport because I remodeled his house. He got on the plane with General Flynn, folks. Good guy. They went to the new base, Bluffdale, Utah. He comes back and says, Stu, it's six floors below ground. He says it's beyond computers. Six floors beyond computers. But he says, what I came back to tell you was, you're right. They built an alien base on the south side of there. And it does run clear down to I-70 through this mountain range. They built an alien base, but he said they did something besides the alien base, too. He said they made a FEMA concentration camp out where I-70 ends at I-15 coming up out of Las Vegas into Salt Lake City. South of Salt Lake City, I-70 ends there, Interstate 70. Before the end of Interstate 70, about 2 miles back, he said, it's about 2 miles in on the south east corner. They put a 10-mile concentration camp, barbed wire, 10-foot-high fence out there with all the barbed wire to hold people, mass amount of people. What are they going to hold them there for? Feed them to the aliens? Because you go back 30 miles, you hit this little town going back east called Richfield, Utah. I saw them cut with a laser machine in 1994, cutting through the side of the mountain. Red boring machine. I went back 2 weeks later, and I left Las Vegas in California after doing some speeches, and I looked for that thing. I turned around in the middle of the freeway and went back and stood in this restroom area, where I saw them, they were cutting it, and there was a gravel road running up there, but you couldn't really even tell that they had taken that, cut a hole, and turned around and put that mountain back and made it look normal. I looked for the exterior cuts where the door would slide. Oh, they're slick at what they do, but what gave them away was gravel road. So I've seen a lot. I know a lot. As Otis said, he says, "Still, why do you think I call you doctor?" He says, "You got a PhD from the Bush, Milman, Clinton Crime Syndicate University." And he said, "That's the reason when you get to the knowledge level that you are, your library card expires." I said, "What do you mean by that?" He says, "You know too much. Now they're going to kill you." He says, "The only thing you're missing 2 months before his death 2 years ago in July when they hit him with stonar and murdered him." He told me, he said, "The only thing you're missing, Stu, is you figured it all out except for one thing. Leonard Nauman had the third largest shipping company in the world, and that's that oil that was being stolen from Yukos. And he said, the stuff coming off that pipeline going down to Israel for 50 cents on the dollar. He says, now Larry Mizell's in control of all that." So I dig on Mizell. Guess what? He owns almost all the oil leases off the coast of the Palestinian coast. He wants the drill that they won't allow him. He's got most of the oil leases out of the state of Israel itself. And he owns the Israeli bank. Him and Brofman at Caesar 7 bought with some gangster out of New Jersey about 2006 or 8. I think it was 2006, they bought the Bank of Israel. And the president, Omar, they bribed him to get the bank because it was a nationalized bank. It wasn't supposed to go private. So the president of Israel got nailed on it, brought up a charge. He finally got off him in the Supreme Court. But he did get nailed again for more bribery, and he was sentenced to jail about a year ago for 6 years on another bribe charge. What did Mizell do? The Silverado boy. First thing he does, he starts opening mass branches of this Israeli bank across the United States. Why? They're the hubs of the drug money laundering from the narcotics coming in the U.S. He controls 14 states, folks. Colorado on west is Mizell's territory. And he brings most of the drugs through Canada into Colorado through a furniture company, a new furniture company. That's how they haul it. And also, I've learned all kinds of other stuff that they haul through Swift Trucking is the big one. And they're based out of St. Joe, Missouri. I could go on and on and on with the knowledge that I have of the various things that they have done to this country. And these congressmen and these senators, they need to be examined real closely. Because I'm telling you something, folks, that I know. The alien agreement allowed, us, the American people, to get invisibility, anti-gravity, and space-time that Nikola Tesla, a scientist, was working on previously. That the Nazis turned around and perfected the cloning and the saucers. And even Admiral Byrd that chased the Nazis during World War II into the hollow earth on the south end, the South Pole, and Joe was talking about the middle of it is Colorado, and the other two U.S. Air Force jets flew into chasing saucers under Operation Blue Book in 1952. Now, Admiral Byrd reported what? After he lost 2,000 men, came back to Congress and later wrote a book, The Hollow Earth, he reported what? Gunships. They weren't hitting them very good because they couldn't hold the saucer and fire the 50 caliber at the same time, I guess. But they had saucers. That was Germany. Now, everybody wants to know, well, you know, what happened to all the gold from Germany? For the Nazis, there was a whole colonel, whole layer of colonels that was surrounded Adolf Hitler, and they went to Spain. They have the highest grade of Portland cement in the world, folks. Now, those caverns is where the gold got buried. Until Henry Kissinger was under Nixon, Secretary of State, Daddy Bush was an assistant in the White House, so was Dick Cheney, an assistant in the White House, and others, Richard Nixon. During that 1972 to 73 time frame, before he's booted out of office, they did an operation, I'm trying to think of the name of it, and involved several deals happened. One, the Suez Canal was opened back up. All the Nazi gold got shipped by a big ship that melted it down in the hull of the ship and turned it to Krugerrands. Krugerrands. They melted them into Krugerrands. So there was the Nazi gold, tons of that, that was robbed from people during World War II. Now, the paintings, all those paintings that were taken, guess who was in charge of that, Joel? Vermeer Lansky, the Jew mob, Milman, OSS boy, in there with Daddy Bush, the OSS, Office of Strategic Services during World War II. What does he do? He runs it for Meyer Lansky. And so they got a bunch of Nazis that are protecting these rail cars for millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of very valuable paintings. Milman and his boys execute the Nazis, and they run off with all the damn paintings. Now, I found interesting things about those paintings. The Smithsonian Institute, in its sub-basement, needs to be examined for all those Leonard Milman donations he made, and also the donations to the University of Wyoming and their basement and sub-basement that they have. All those paintings worth hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, need to be examined. Where did Leonard Milman get them? I just told you where he got them. This is how big it is. It's happened since World War II, folks, and it was called the Brown Shoe Boys. 79 men who created the CIA after Truman agreed to do it, Dulles and Kissinger and Milman and Daddy Bush and a whole bunch of others, because General Russell Bowen was one of them. General Russell Bowen, who turned on him, and Russell Bowen became a good friend of mine. Okay, he was locked up in Springfield for landing a 727 full of cocaine from Central America. Then he called all the press and landed, said, I'm part of Iran-Contra and I'm landing this airplane. He was arrested and taken to Springfield, held like Bob Hunt was without any charges. 5 years had him in a coma, narcotic-induced coma. And then after 5 years, he all of a sudden ends up in his bed in his home. And his wife was told, if you ever open your mouth, he's alive, he's down there. If you open up your mouth, you're going to die, and he's going to die. Just because he tried to rat him out after Al Martin, the Iran-Contra whistleblower, my friend, who I helped get his book published called The Conspirators, which is a fabulous read, okay? Al's dead, I believe. I believe they killed him in Venezuela, but the point was Russell Bowen was working with Al Martin after Al Martin blew the whistle. So they decided to gangbang and try to put him out of business and couldn't do it. This thing got out of control, Joe, and they took over the economy. They've taken over everything. The communications now were all screwed because they can listen to everything. They can use your phone as a weapon against you, and that's what they're doing now. And now we've got this virus out here, this coronavirus. There's this big outbreak. I wonder why this big outbreak is happening suddenly. They put 5G over in China 2 years ago, year and a half, 2 years ago. All of a sudden, you got a whole town almost dead. What the hell is this? Now, you know, I've had Amber, the nurse from Bakersfield, said she was having two periods a month, 38 years of age. Started asking her neighbors. They were having the same thing. They're in their 20s and 30s, early 40s. That's unheard of for women to be having two periods a month. And all of a sudden, they find out there's 100 women in town. So they all started raising hell, and guess what? They took down the 5G wire, or the 5G lines off the telephone poles in Bakersfield. You know what they did, Joe? They cut down the middle of the street and buried it there and covered it back up with asphalt. She said her period's going back to normal because they buried the line. Now, what's going to happen to all those people that have that cable running into their house and hooked up to their computers and stuff? If it does that to the human body and it made her ears swell up and her brain swell up, the same thing that's on a video that I put up yesterday on my website showing some guy kicking around over in China. She said she was like that. Her brain swelled up and she was dripping pus out of her ears before they got the 5G buried in the street. I think this is part of what they're doing. Okay, the chemtrails dump out the chemicals or the metal. That always said they got this whole planet lit up. They don't need a chip in you. He said, with everything everybody breathes now that's in the atmosphere, he said everybody is a signature now on this earth to the aliens, to the bad guys. And as he said, Stu, there's 200,000 of them that are registered with the NSA, the National Security Agency, as being alien possessed. They have to do that under their agreement. 200,000 of them. Now, the Bible says there was a war in heaven in Genesis, and it said there was a million angels approximately, and then the third fell. That'd be 333,000, not 200,000. That'd be Satan lying to you. And the second part of it is they had to register their clones. They have cloned 10,000 to date as of 2 years ago, supposedly, and the NSA has everybody's name. Now, they're cloned. Humans, 6 months it takes them in Hope, Arkansas to clone them. Now, if they've done that many, 10 million of them, they don't have a soul. They don't have a conscience. Wow, they walk into a school and start shooting. Or they walk into some place, a nightclub, and start shooting. Or some event, start shooting. They don't have a conscience. Hey, they're going to reclone me anyway. I'll be back. That has to be their thinking. But that's what we're up against. Now, John Lear, who I came across in Las Vegas, John was a CI pilot. He was a test pilot, et cetera. We had many conversations. I took Robbie Stitch over there, wrote beside the narrative. He came in on Christmas one night. I called John up. Hey, Stu, come on over. Let's have a drink. Went over there and had a drink with him and sat and chat for 3 hours, Christmas Eve. John's dad owned Lear Jets, and he sold it in 1952. Why? Because he took a special contract with the United States government to build 150 flying saucers for the United States government, designed by the aliens. And they did it. We have a fleet. What do you think Donald Trump said, you know, we now have a space force? We've had it since 1959. They completed it, 52 to 59. They pushed John's dad out of there because he was talking about it, what he was doing. And they put someone else in charge. Lost the contract a couple of years before the ending. I know these things. Now, I asked Otis, I said, how many of these congressmen and senators do they have them chipped? Like they do down here at E-Systems. They chip them. And they have them go out and do their killings, do their different stuff. Daddy Bush controlled Raytheon, E-Systems. And stonars people and steals elections and does all this stuff. I said, how many of these congressmen and senators are chipped? He says, Stu. He says, 6 out of 10 of them, we at the NSA estimate they have been cloned. 6 out of 10, we estimate, our think tank estimates, 6 out of 10 have been cloned. And he said, they probably have the rest of them chipped, if not. You've already exposed the Abramoff story and the blackmail with the whorehouses in Washington and the stuff that they tried to cover up pertaining to the Franklin cover-up out of Omaha, Nebraska. He said, you're familiar with all this blackmail. Well, that's something that Jim Rothstein, former New York detective that's been on all this, the CIA came to me and said, back off with our operation. Come on, folks. This is how bad it is. Go back and look at what Strzok and McCabe made up the dossier with the UK, what was his name? Joe?
Go ahead.
The guy out of the UK that was Hillary Clinton's dossier that the Russians were working with Trump and all that lie. Okay? You saw Joe Johnson out of Ohio. Good congressman, DeSantis, or whatever his name is. You saw three or four of them going and attacking these guys. bringing the truth out. I mean, this is how corrupt the problem is. The whole Justice Department, the whole Congress and Senate, except for about 10 of them up there, maybe five, are corrupt. They're in on the take. Here's another example of what I know. Nancy Pelosi had a bill, something she was going to vote on or something. This is years ago. And all of a sudden, she jumps the other way and does the opposite. She got this refinery in Napa, California. The refinery, or a winery, not refinery, winery in Napa, California. Her husband, it's in his name, the corporation, he just got it out of nowhere. It was abroad. Then he turns up with Walt Disney stock. No one owns Walt Disney. Disneyland, all that. Daddy Bush owns on ABC News is part of it. And they Brockman and Melman and Daddy Bush took over Hollywood back in 1993 and 4 with the corporate raids. That's where they got that. At Nancy Pelosi's bribe was that. Now, Chuck Schumer, it's up on my website. I might add about Nancy real quick for the edification of listeners. I heard yesterday that she has checked into the Betty Ford Center for Alcoholism. She broke the world's record that they got in that book, something world's record. She broke it. She's in there. So many times she's checked in there because she's a drunk. She's a drunk. She's insane. But her bribery was that winery, folks. If anybody were to examine her husband and go back and look at what bill she had at the time, take Chuck Schumer. They had to neutralize him. They had to neutralize Bill Alexander of Arkansas, who was revising Iran-Contra, was going to bring up hearings back up, was working with Al Martin. What did they do to him? The Boulder Properties Limited. Bunch of junk properties and Millman's going in with Neil Bush running the show, blackmailing Congress senators. So here's Bill Alexander. Bring up Iran-Contra, and he's got into that partnership because these were the congressmen and senators they targeted, about two dozen of them, in Boulder Properties Limited, series of partnerships, partnership number one, partnership number two, different ones. Chuck Schumer was sucked into it, Bill Alexander, but when Bill was going to hold hearings, another set of Iran-Contra hearings, all of a sudden, they pulled the plug and said, oh, Bill, hey, he's got to pay $10,000 a month. What? Oh, yeah, you're upside down. Well, he filed for bankruptcy. What does that do to your election? It ruins you. That's how they did it. They did Chuck Schumer the same way. All of a sudden, Chuck flips. His wife divorces him. He flips. And guess what? He's one of their stooges now. So he didn't get his so-called $10,000 a month he had to pay out of his pocket. Instead, he flipped. He joined the Satanists. Boulder Properties Limited, put it in, folks, on my website and search engine. Just look for Chuck Schumer. There it is. Boulder Properties Limited was written about because Al Martin sold them the partnerships. Al Martin, Iran-Contra whistleblower, sold them the partnerships, folks. It's in his book, The Conspirators. Where else do I go with this, Joe?
I think you better bring it to an end here, Stu, because
I'm done. I'm done. I'm just trying to, you know, I'm just trying to give an overview, people to understand. What did I do this folks for? To have a relationship with my daughter one day. And that never happened. You know, I've been offered, I might add this. In 1997, this is the real kicker. In 1997, when I was invited to that grand jury by the M&L boys, that was a sting operation that Ross Perot had set up. It was going to really blast Millman apart and hopefully get him in jail. And they sealed that whole case under national security, by the way, and the settlements covered all up. Now, all of a sudden, after going to the grand jury room and being told I can't go in the grand jury room, here I got an invitation, the whole bit, they wouldn't allow me. The FBI, two students from the FBI, Mark Holtzlaw and this other shithead were there, a couple of FBI five students. They're always monitoring me and trying to crater me in Colorado when I lived out there. So you follow me every place I went. Here was the deal. You get near the door again, or you try to go through there, we're going to arrest you. But it's sort of like conduct. What else would he charge you with? I'm like, fuck you, and I walked away. Pardon my expression, ladies, gentlemen. So I thought, I'll get back to him. So I got with one of the M&L PIs on the deal, told him what the deal was. He said, sit tight, Stu, we'll get you in there. 2 days later, I get a phone call. It's Norm Earley. He's the former Denver prosecutor that I was providing information to about Silverado, about the Denver airport fraud. Noman and Bush had built it, committed all this fraud, and had all the land tracks, all that stuff. And congressional hearings I caused on. Okay. Now, he calls me up. He was the guy we were feeding. Denver never really prosecuted anybody. And he calls me up, oh, Stu Webb, hey, Norm Earley. Blast from the past, Norm, what's going on? I'm thinking he's all right guy. He says, well, he says, I would like to meet with him. He says, I have a deal down here at the Cherry Creek Country Club. It's turned into a workout center, but it's turned into like a big bar and restaurant down there, too. Where a lot of people go to do business. He says, I'd like to buy you lunch today or tomorrow. I said, well, Norm, I'm real busy right now. And I was. I had a warehouse. I was doing the duck farm. So I told him, I said, I can't really for a few days. But I said, Norm, what's up? He said, well, Stu, I've got something for you. He says, Olive Branch. And he's telling me how he's working for Lockheed Martin now as the head of security. And he only has to work 20 hours a week. And he's writing children's books, he says. And this is former black prosecutor of Denver, Colorado, Norm Earley. He says to me, well, Stu, I've got an Olive Branch for you, and I have a briefcase for you. I said, well, what's in the briefcase? He said, well, that's what I need to talk to you in person about and explain to you. I said, Norm, just tell me what the deal is real quick. He said, well, he said, there's an annuity in here worth $500,000. You can go cash immediately. He said, there's an annuity every year, $500,000 until $7 million is cashed out. He says, all you have to do is shut your mouth and get rid of your website. That was before I had the website. He says, shut your mouth and get rid of the radio shows. That's what it was, because I was doing radio shows. I said, oh, in other words, you're making me an offer by Milman's? He goes, yeah. I said, well, you have the piece of paper that says I can see my daughter a couple times a month. All they have to do is put her on an airplane. I'll even pay for it. He goes, that's not part of the deal. You have to forget about her for the rest of your life. I said, well, Norm, I can't make that deal. So that's where I'm at. I should have hit the $7 million joke and then hired a hitman. You got anything you want to add?
Nope. I think we need to close it now because people have a general background of what you've been through, where you get your knowledge, how it first came about, and now where you're at now.
I'll tell you where we're at. In the bigger picture, after 37 years, I am the oldest living whistleblower other than Terry Reed. And Terry doesn't live far from me.
Yeah.
Okay. He still sells his book, Clinton Bush and the CIA, but he can't open his mouth. That was part of an agreement to keep his wife alive. Okay. So Terry's okay. But here's the deal. I'm the oldest living. And every year there's been an attempt on my life in some way, shape, or form. I get shot with a satellite every day. Sometimes during the day, sometimes during the night. They're poking me. Now, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be around, but I know the God's divine intervention has kept me here. For a reason. There's still purpose in it for me. And it's like you, Joe. I mean, the wisdom and knowledge you have is like me. I mean, you've been studying this for years. You got about 10 years on me. I'm 65. You got about 10 on me or whatever. And wisdom and knowledge is the only thing we gain in life, folks. Wisdom and knowledge. And it's what you do with it for good, for evil. And right now, we are at a breaking point on this planet. We've got this evil cabal, fallen angel-possessed human beings, aliens they call them, that have made an agreement with the human race. Every time this has happened, reportedly, like in the Book of Enoch, They were doing it in Sodom and Gomorrah, doing cloning. I think it's in the book of Enoch, as I recall. And then Atlantis and other places they claimed they were doing cloning. Every time they've done this, God destroys the human race, cleans it up, there's a cleanup happens. We're cloning people, folks. We got Daddy Bush with a fallen angel possessed in him. Henry Kissinger, Larry Mizell, David Rockefeller, Lawrence Rothschild, Pope Benedict, Patrick Wu of China, Ansgar Ben-Tzvi, the head rabbi in Israel, Paul Warburg, David Rockefeller, Meyer Rothschild, and Bill Grace. Those are the ones that I remember right now off the top of my head. Those are what they call the comptrollers of currency for the gray men's empire. They are the top fallen possessed aliens, fallen angel possessed humans, that the rest of them underneath them answer to. And I had asked Goldust, I said, God, if they got 200,000, I'm registered. I said, then you're telling me all the world leaders, all the kings and queens and presidents and everybody are all possessed. He goes, no, Stu, they aren't. He says, they're trying and would like to have that, but instead they got an aide in there that's possessed. It's telling the president what to do. I said, really? This is how they do it? He said, oh, yeah. He said, they always got an aide around one of those presidents or queens or kings or whoever they are. They're possessed. That's the way they're controlling them. Anyway, we got to look at that. If we got 6 out of 10 congressmen and senators, I would say Nancy Pelosi, oh, my God, she's definitely possessed. I think she's got a fallen angel in her. I believe Hillary Clinton's got a fallen angel in her, too. But where do we go with this? Prayer is the key. Now, Joe, that's what you do. You're a prayer warrior. You get in there and battle them on all these satanic holidays, and you do it in during the full moon and everything else. People need to be doing that on a daily basis. I found out when you start praying for somebody, if you pray for them religiously, folks, God says you only have to ask once, okay? But I believe in prayer. Keep after it. Bring them to salvation or take them off my planet. Take them off my planet. If they're unsalvageable, take them out of here, God. He does, folks. Move it. That said, prayer is key, isn't it, Joe?
That's it.
And get ready. If you have to, be a warrior for God if the day comes. We may have to arrest them. We have a legal right to arrest these people, folks. Citizens arrest. You do it with 50, 25, 50, or 100 people. That sheriff's going to take that person and lock them up. Whether it's congressman or not, when you got to your proper charges there. Now, okay, say you're out in the parking lot and you witness some woman being robbed and you run over and jump on the robber and you hold him until the police come. You just made a citizen's arrest. The cop comes out, they haul him off, they have you sign on it and help bring in as a witness. You just made the citizen's arrest. Okay? That's what happens. You have a legal right to arrest your congressmen, your senators, your council members, your mayors, your police chiefs, your police department personnel, whoever it is that's doing something illegal. You have the legal right to arrest them. You just do it with your neighbors and stuff. Get a mass amount of people together. Okay? This Congress and this Senate, with what they have put us through, the American people, for 3 years, and what they put Trump through, and the way you're blackmailed. And the blackmail comes to Bibi Netanyahu and this stupid little Jew in Denver named Larry Mizell, folks. They're the two that are buddy-buddies, APEC directors. Remember, the two running the show in Denver are APEC directors. And who created APEC? Bibi. They're all tied together. We have a stranglehold on this country of blackmail by the Jewish mob and these fallen angels possessed human beings. That said, that's where I come from. I'm never going to stop.
Send it right there, Stu.
Hey, buddy. I'm never stopping. With that said, Joe, I thank you. I slapped too damn much. I guess I told him what I needed to. I don't know.
Okay.
Okay, buddy. Thank you. Have a good one.
All right.
Okay.